G'day everybody, welcome to this episode 38 of the Free Kick W Pod. Different format this week. Instead of doing our pre-recorded sessions, we're doing it via Twitter Spaces this week, and it's not just going to be about fantasy. It's going to be about a bit of fantasy, but then also just some of the big content, big AFLW content that came out of the round that was, the round one of the finals. So with me, I've got Bailey, and then we've also got Jono and Will from the Free Kick crew. How are we going, everybody?
Good, mate. Good, mate. Hope you're going well. Hope you guys, Jono, Will, hope you guys are going well as well.
Yeah, going great. Loving the finals. It was a good close contest on the weekend from a few of the games. Love to see it.
Definitely enjoying the finals. It's been very interesting couple of days in the AFLW world. I'll say that.
Yeah, well, that kind of takes us straight to kind of what I want to chat about first, just before even talking about finals. In the last kind of 24 hours, we've had some pretty outrageous news coming out of the AFLW. The first one is Fremantle's going to need a new coach. I truly don't know if I get this. Will, have you got any opinions on Coops being gone?
Yeah, I can only wonder whether it's that they just think they need a fresh start, because, I mean, he's been there not from the start, but for quite a while now, and they obviously had a bit of a dip this year. Lots of reasons for that, which I'm sure we'll discuss. But yeah, the only thing I can think of is that they reckon they need a new direction.
Yeah, just a new direction after like one off season, though. Like a season where they've had a lot of injuries to key players. In the previous seasons were all very, very successful. They're arguably the premiers of the 2020 season. It boggles my mind, to be honest. I would have thought you'd give your coach a little bit more of a shot.
I mean, I didn't say I was certain about it. It's just the only reason I can think of, because, yeah, it seems very surprising, because he's had a fair bit of success with this group, and you'd think that a good off-season, some fit bodies coming into next season, there's no reason why Freo can't push back up the ladder. So, yeah, it's an interesting one.
Do you reckon they're committing to like a rebuild here? Is that what this is saying?
It sounds like it. I mean, we know that some of their senior players are getting on. We've seen Cara Antonio retire. Bowers, as good as she's been, isn't going to get any younger. But, I mean, for me, for Freo, the time should be now, really. They've still got a pretty good list.
Yeah, 100%.
Is the writing not on the wall, though, that like some of their key players are just like a little too old and doesn't sound like they're that buoyant on the back end of their roster? Like, is it a case like Rats being fired from St Kilda because they sit there and go, well, we don't think he's going to be the next premiership coach? Does Fremantle come to the same opinion and just say, no, we're going to not going to re-up the contract?
I mean, I thought that sacking Rats was the wrong call as well. So,
but I'll also say 2022 is not the year to be saying that teams are too old to be winning premierships. Of all years, you could say it.
Mm. Yeah, true.
Yeah, because I think for me, and I've said it most of the year, Evan Antonio missing for Freo was basically the biggest struggle they had. They lost Horton to Port Adelaide, always going to be a big loss, but they had Antonio there. So for her to go down injured meant that their forward line just lost all structure. So to me, next season, a fit Evan Antonio, there's no reason why that forward line can't click into gear, especially with Anya Tai playing some really good footy as well. Kiara Bowers is only 30. She's not that old, especially in AFLW circles. Well,
that's the other thing. How old, like, are they realistically? I would have thought one of the reasons that you worry about age is because you've had years and years of impact on the body. The league hasn't been going a hugely long period of time. I know they were playing state footy before that, but it's still something where I reckon these players can go for quite a while still.
Mm. You bring up a good point, though, and Bales, maybe this is one for you. Does the getting of a new coach impact any decision to bring in Kiara Bowers potentially with a new game plan, maybe a new stoppage structure?
Well, I don't know, because as you guys have said, I was a bit shocked by it as well, because as you guys have said, that I thought that this year they had a lot of injuries, and also obviously two of their best players, Kiara Bowers and Hayley Miller, both having limited pre-season. So I thought, okay, well, they certainly haven't been gifted a very good start, that's for sure. They've sort of been on the back foot from the get-go, and then they just never were able to get in sync. And obviously we've seen years in the past with like your Adelaide, and when Western Bulldogs won the premiership in Brisbane when they won, like these teams have been consistent throughout the year, but they also had very good starts to the season, whereas Freo was sort of on the back foot and they couldn't get it. So I'm not sure. I think it's like they've taken an English soccer approach where that's like as soon as you lose a few games and up, sacked out the door. That's like with obviously mentioned Ratton for the men's and Trent Coupe for the women's. But yeah, I don't know exactly what that means for Kiara Bowles and everyone else moving forward to Freo. But yeah, bit of a mind boggler, I think.
Well, I just remember being on the end of season spaces and just kind of thinking about Kiara Bowles next year. It seems like she would be the player to have just given that form run. But this just adds another element of uncertainty going into next season. What's that Fremantle midfield going to look like? If we hear any word of this being a full rebuild, does that not mean that you worry that Turbo might not spend as much time in there? Maybe she goes forward like she was in like rounds two and round three this year.
Yeah, it definitely is a worry. We've seen with new coaches, obviously they've got new ideas, and they might see Kiara Bowles as obviously maybe they want a Megan Kaufman in there a lot more instead. Maybe they want other players playing in there. I still think Bowles will still be in there, as she said in her interview on the AFLW Fantasy Pod. Obviously, she said that she can't kick much more than 30 metres, so. She just wants to play it like her role is in the midfield, but obviously that was with a different coach. So I'm sort of hoping and I'm assuming that her role won't change much, but you just don't know. So it sort of would be risky in terms of fantasy next year because it's not like she's going to be cheap.
Yeah,
no, she's going to be ridiculous.
If the pricing structure's the same, she will probably be priced over 200 grand. That is just mind-bogglingly high because her average was 121. Which is just like that's fantastic for a men's one. That's like elite in the AFLM, and she's done it in reduced game time. Like to me, it's one of those ones where we had the same conversation at the start of this year, where we were like, "Do you don't you pay up for her?" This level of uncertainty for me is, and it's still a long way out. I'll say that is putting it more in that wait and watch category. Like, we're going to have to see what happens in the preseason, no doubt.
I would really love to be incoming coach for Fremantle. I think that would be a great position to be walking into.
Just a full midfield and
yeah. You've got a phenomenal team there in front of you. Like, as far as a first season coach goes, that's the team. You'd be very happy to take them over.
And they've also got some pretty good young players. I think people sort of focus a lot on those big stars, but they've actually got some pretty good youth in there as well. So, as you say, Jono, a good mix for a coach to walk into.
Well, Mimstrom certainly looks like a decent young ruck. They've got Dana East. They've got Kaufman. You know,
Sarah Murray is going to take off next year.
No, definitely. No, I don't believe you. She had like two good rounds and none of them were in my side, so it doesn't matter. But talking of superstar teams, perfect segue. Let's have a chat about the other big bit of news from today, which is the All-Australian squad getting announced. I won't presume to go through every single player that's been named, but are there any selections that we think were kind of particularly exciting or you liked seeing them in there or some names that maybe got the snub?
I'll give you one name that I was sort of a bit weird that they got selected. Eyeless C.H. Sheeran. Like, they didn't spell her name right in the photo. Didn't get that. I don't know if you saw that.
No way.
They got it wrong.
It was
on the Instagram photo that they put up. It said C.H. for Sheeran. I'm like, come on. Like, we haven't just had a whole year of Oliver Sheeran dominating and being pretty much written in most of Richmond's like match reports and headlines and stuff, which has been great. But
But I guess like putting that aside, great to see Oliver Sheeran in there. She's had, I mean, how many players have debuted and then made the All Australian squad in their first season? It's incredible.
I'm sure Will can speak. to more of this than me. But
well, I reckon there'd be 21 in the first season, but beyond
that... Yeah, well, we're obviously not out the first season.
Surely somewhat... Well, do we count Mimi Hill, who'd played less than a full season's worth of games by the time she got selected?
Oh, it's probably the closest, I have to think.
And did Maddie...
That's a stretch. I mean, it's her actual first season. Wasn't on a list to start the season. Yeah,
Prespakis would have as well, because she won the Rising Star and the W Award in the same season. So, Prespakis.
Yeah. That's a good one.
But, like, I don't think I'm surprised to see Sheeran there, because I think she's been the best defender this year.
No, to me, Sheeran is probably, of all the defenders picked, she's probably the biggest lock. I think if she doesn't get selected, there's something desperately wrong in the way that the team's been been selected.
Yeah.
I think the big snub for me is Libby Birch.
Yeah.
Who second most intercept possessions of any player on average. Like that's a bit of an oversight in my mind.
Yeah. To me, the defensive pool was fairly strong, but to me, Birch has been the standout defender in a standout defensive unit in the Melbourne backline. I get the feeling that with Libby Birch, she's probably possibly suffered from the fact that they have a very good team defence, so that they work really well as a unit. But to me, statistically, if nothing else, she probably deserves to be in that squad.
Yeah, and I think the one that she'd probably replace for me in that defender group, and I'm not going to bother asking you, Will, but it's probably Lauren Butler. Like,
yeah, I actually probably agree with that. Butler's first half of the year was exceptional, but sort of tailed off as the year went off. She was definitely close to the squad, I'll say that. I would probably be myself tossing up between her and probably Lala Wifi, who similarly had a very good start to the year and tailed off as well, but I think Birch probably is a better shot than Butler personally.
Yeah. Does anyone else have any, surprise selections in their mind?
I wouldn't call it a surprise selection. I'm just really thankful that they've finally recognized that Alice Edmonds is a great player. Like, thank God.
I'm just assuming that she's going to get snubbed. I can see it happening.
There's two very good ruckmen in the squad with her, so it's no slam dunk, but surely she's got to get the nod.
Surely you realize now that you've said this, it will be Tali Hickey on the bench, Breanne Moody starting ruck, and Alice Edmonds will be the only ruck named in the squad who won't make the team.
Yeah. I mean, I also supposedly put a curse on Kiara Bowers the 4 days before she put up the highest score that's ever happened. I don't believe I can curse people.
this is very true. But this is a little different where we're not like just... I feel like we've got more of a track record here of Alice Edmonds being snubbed.
Yeah, I think the only other one that was a bit of a surprise, and it's probably more because we've viewed her game through a fantasy lens and not as much through just a general playlist, was Ellie McKenzie, because we've been following her very closely through the entire year with a lot of frustration at her low scoring. But, I mean, you've been saying it all year, Liam, she's an elite kick, and what she does with the ball is fantastic. It just, in terms of what we're normally talking about fantasy, it just hasn't quite translated to excellent scores.
Wait, I've not been nearly as harsh on Ellie McKenzie as Mel, who called Ellie McKenzie lazy at one point because she stands off the stoppage. I think the big surprise for me was seeing Karen Paxman in there, who I think gets a little bit of a legacy boost in my mind. I don't think she's been elite this year. And I would say that, the best contested mark in the AFLW, and probably the player who's, outside of Jasmine Garner, who probably should have been in there, is Talia Randall, who's just, her ability to impact some of those games in the back half of the year was outrageous.
Yeah, I think Paxman as well probably is benefited by recency bias, because she's had a very good finish to the season. She's had a few very, very good games to end the year.
Yeah, I think two of her last three were very good. But outside of that, has not been the reason for, or not even close to the reason for Melbourne's success. I think you'd have a long list of players before her as the most impactful in an otherwise very, very good season.
you'd probably have Eliza West in there, probably ahead of her, because I think they were mentioning her in the commentary during the Crows Melbourne final, how Eliza West, like Purcell, is like that sort of the one that the contested player in the middle that gets the handball out. So, yeah, it was a bit of a – that was probably the one sort of baffling one, I guess. But all in all, I think that the squad was obviously pretty good, though, to be a lot of players there. It's actually going to be very tough to trim it down to 22, because I think there's a lot of players in there that could make an argument to be in there.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that I came away from last year being outraged that Lalawifi hadn't been in there in the squad at all, after she was clearly Carlton's best defender and probably in the top two or three defenders for the year. But I don't think there's any kind of screaming miss as much as last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Well, we're very excited to go through and cut down that list, as you say, Bailey, because we've actually put together our predicted All-Australian squad, which we'll go through a bit later, which will be quite exciting.
Yep, I definitely look forward to seeing who makes the cut.
Well, before we get into that, though, there was a round of finals that happened, and I'm sure there are some very interesting thoughts to be had on it. I think we'll just go through them in chronological order. First and foremost, Adelaide lost 27-48 to Melbourne. Jono, if you could say, like, what's your biggest thought from this game, what would it be?
I mean, to me, this is just, why don't all teams tag Noffy? That seems like the easiest call. They've done it's the second time this year that they've managed to shut her down, and it's, what, the third time this year that Adelaide have lost? It seems like the way to go about beating the Premiers.
Yeah, that was my biggest takeaway as well. You know, Noffy may have been the highest fantasy scorer for Adelaide, but that was almost solely on the back of her work as a tackler. Otherwise, she was quite like low impact in terms of her possessions, wasn't a stoppage beast, wasn't stopping the ball getting out to Liv Purcell on the outside. Surely other teams have to kind of sit up and take notice next season that You actually have to put a body on Ebony Marinoff and make it part of your game plan to do that, to actually be able to beat Adelaide.
100%. 100%. And it's something that I'm keen for your thoughts on this, Will. Liam and I were chatting about this before, but I can't decide whether this is just Melbourne's got really good tactics for beating Adelaide, or if I think, and I'm probably convinced, that Melbourne to me now are probably my favourite for the flag. I think they're looking very, very strong. Their pressure was elite. And the key thing for me is that when we talk about, like, you know, teams that win finals, it's not so much about your best six. It's about your bottom six players in your team, the ones that are kind of, you know, the weak links, supposedly. But there were so many big moments in this game that I was looking at and going, wow, that wasn't, you know, Kate Hoare doing that. That was Fitzsimmons, like, doing that smother on the wing, or Leighton Macken taking that intercept mark, or Tully Gillard coming out and shutting down two of the best forwards in the game. Like, huge efforts from players that are, you know, on other weeks struggling to stay in the side.
Yeah, and to answer your question, I think the answer is a bit of both. Melbourne is an elite team. Their midfield, on every single line, they know exactly what they're doing. And this is kind of what we're talking about with Libby Birch, but extends to the whole parts of the ground where everyone knows what they're doing. They have a role. And I think this extends to this ability to shut down Ebony Marinoff, where they go in with a plan, they stick to it, and they execute it. Like, we know that being the player that she is, Marinoff isn't a high disposal efficiency player. A lot of her kicks are under pressure because she is that almost the extractor a lot, but her disposal efficiency was 25% or less this week because they were putting so much pressure on her. And that's clearly a plan. And it's kind of what you were saying, which is, why don't other teams do it? And the possible answer is they try and they fail, and Melbourne are just good enough to execute it. So I think that Melbourne are definitely probably the favourite, if not second behind Brisbane. Those two are probably the standout teams at the moment. But after they started slowly against Adelaide. We shouldn't forget that Adelaide kicked the first three goals, and at that stage we're looking, the reigning premiers are gonna roll out and take a big scalp here. And something really clicked at quarter time, and from that point on, Melbourne were just electric, and they looked unbeatable.
I agree that they looked unbeatable, but and I think this is one for you maybe as well, Bales. Do we think that Chelsea Randall tried to come back too early? Because, Will, you were talking about disposal efficiency for Marinov. That was one of my key takeaways, is that disposal efficiency across the ball was very low for the midfielders at Adelaide. But Chelsea Randall had 0% disposal efficiency and did not look like she was running fully healthy. Do you reckon she raced back for a final too quickly and as a result probably didn't give her best effort?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. My takeaway, obviously, from a Crows man myself is that I think Chelsea Randall is clearly probably the toughest player that we've ever seen in the AFLW. Obviously, she got cleaned up. She was going to take the kick and fell over. Obviously, I thought it was a bit more than just tripping over your shoelace in time. Yeah, but
certainly looked like it.
she did try to play it off as a shoelace, but her feet were not that close together at the time.
No,
her eyes were looking in different directions as well.
You could definitely tell that when the Crows don't have Chelsea Randall playing, they're not the same team. She's obviously there's a reason she's a captain, she's a leader out there, and well, I think that they said that the only final that the Crows had lost in their history where Chelsea Randall didn't play was the grand final where they lost to Brisbane a few years ago. So she obviously means a lot, but I took that as well. She wasn't starting in the centre bounces like until really the last quarter. She was mainly playing forward, and that was sort of a bit of a flag to me. I thought, well, maybe she's not 100%, because if she was, if I'm Matthew Cole, I'm putting Chelsea Randall in the first centre bounce of a pretty crucial final, because it gets you obviously the week off, home qualifying final. But yeah, I do think she probably came back too early. But hey, she could be better for the run this week, and I guess we'll just have to see what happens in the final this weekend. But yeah, Melbourne, after quarter time, they completely dominated the game and certainly showed they're probably the team to beat at the early stage of the final series.
Yeah, and I think I'm going to kindly disagree. I think Brisbane are clear favourites for my mind, but we'll get to that in a minute. Just one... to kind of twist the game towards a fantasy lens. I'm definitely editorialising here, but I think that the emergence of Talia Gillard as like a Beck Miller type presence, kind of a very clean, tall forward, a tall defender, probably opens up Libby Birch as a defender option next year. Like, she had her highest scoring game ever on the weekend with a 73 as an excellent interceptor. Just because she gets to kind of play free and not have to be very close to an opponent, do we agree that, you know, Libby Birch is potentially an underpriced option next year?
I think so. She's going to become like that, like a little bit similar to like that James Sicily in the men's type sort of role, where she'll roam around, she'll do her intercepting role. Also, if she needs to play on at all, she can still do that as well. But as you said, I think that it'll free her up a bit. And I don't know if you've got in front of you, but I don't know what she'll be priced at in terms of average. But I would imagine she'd be pretty cheap with a few sort of lower scores in there.
Yeah, I think she's going to be in the mid to high 50s. Let me just double check that. Will, Jono, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I completely agree. It's one of those things where by finding players to fill out a team defence, Birch can basically be that director type. She can tell other players where to go and just roam around free and take those marks. So I think she's a player that could be a price increase player. It'll depend on what her price is if you guys do find it, because I think there is a bit of a chance that the potential benefit and how much she can make mightn't quite be there, but I guess we'll see.
So priced at 51 for next year. And she went at 73 in that game. And she scored above that 51, or at or above that 51 in each of the last four games. And I think I think we might have seen Talia Gillard since round six, at which point five of her last six games she scored above her price stat. So that says to me that there is some correlation with a very tall defender who's capable bobbing up as an option. Another player that I think we kind of saw the best of their performances on the weekend is Liv Purcell. Will, I know you're a big fan.
I am a big fan, yes.
Does she take another step?
I think she can, to be honest.
Is there another gear for her, or is this about as good as we're going to get?
I think there is another gear, because she actually led the competition in uncontested possessions per game this year, which is impressive given she mostly made her name as an inside midfielder. So I think she can do it all. She's won a Best and Fairest and won an All-Australian jacket in her second season at Geelong. She's taken that number one midfielder mantle at the D's. I think she is a big chance to go even bigger and better next season. I think she's just going to keep getting better.
She's now had gone above 100 three of her last five games, for context, and kicked a goal in three of those games as well. That's a fairly good sign. Jono, any thoughts?
Well, yeah, I think there's two really good signs about that. I mean, firstly, she's taken a big step, which is great. But another is I like that she gets better the longer the season goes, because I am expecting that the next few seasons are going to be longer and longer. I don't think we're going to be at 10 games a season forever. Eventually, I think the comp's going to build out to hopefully 17 games a season in the home and away. And if that happens, you love a player who's peaking, you know, as the year builds, because that means that there's, you know, they're just kind of getting better and better as it goes on. I really like that there's that, but there's also then if the season's going longer than Melbourne and Brisbane, like the players that have done well from these teams this season, they've done that on the back of really, really difficult fixtures. If they can play some easier teams, someone who's getting uncontested ball like Liv Purcell, that's going to be a very, very underpriced option.
And the other thing we've got to obviously remember is well is that I know, Liam, obviously you were speaking about on the spaces and stuff, but obviously with the draft next year, obviously with the mature age players next year, that we may not get as many rookies next year. So we may have to look for a few like cheaper options in premium brackets in certain positions. And obviously Liv Purcell, I think she could definitely take her game. She averaged, was 81, and I could see her.
Yeah.
And I could see her taking it to a 90 plus average and being that. So you're getting value. And I know Shelby's obviously big on that with fantasy and that you try and look for value in pretty much every player you get. And I think Liv Purcell and then obviously Libby Birch, you spoke about, we may not have to be able to pick as many rookies. So we might have to go for these a bit more of a value play. So I do like both, I think.
Yeah, slightly different context, but I think she's going to be similar to a player like a Georgie Prasparkas or even from last season, someone like a Bates or a Miller, where we know they're good players, but they can take that fantasy step and become someone who, if you pick them at the right time or if you start with them as a unique, it might be something that sets up your whole season.
Yeah, well, Liam.
She feels a little bit like what we kind of thought we might get from Tilly Lucas Rod, kind of that player priced in that lower premium bracket that we're kind of hoping takes that next step. Now, TLR didn't do it this year, but that's the kind of place that we're in. Same with maybe Hayley Miller as well.
Yeah. Safer team, I'll say that, being a premiership contender as opposed to an expansion team.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I kind of hope that she does maybe get a few more chances for some contested possessions and maybe slightly fewer hand passes. And I think that's another thing to take from the back half of this year is that she kind of is getting those double-digit kicks, which hasn't always been a staple in Melbourne sides. I think they were the highest hand-passing team of the year.
Well, it's also interesting because she's very handball-happy at Geelong, and it would appear that the player who we have talked a lot about being handball-happy at Melbourne is Eliza West. So it's almost like that role that she had is taken by another player, so she's had to grow into a different role, which is not only more fantasy-friendly, but it's helped her elevate her game just from a footy sense as well.
Yeah, no doubt. Any other takeaways from this game? Outside of maybe, if it had been a goal, it would have been goal of the year, but Alyssa Bannon's run down the wing and those seven running bounces was outrageous. Like, her speed is ridiculous.
Yeah, like, that was such a great pleasure to play from the half-back line. It was just a shame that it didn't end in a goal. It was a turnover kick, I believe, but
Yeah, it was a shocking kick. Unsurprisingly, given he'd run more than half the ground.
But the theatre of it was fantastic, and that it was amazing. And we've seen that Alyssa Bannon really can step it up in finals. She did it last season in that game at the G against Brisbane. She definitely is a good point of difference that the Ds have going into their forward line.
No doubt.
I think in these pressure games, where especially throughout the end, everyone's tired. If you've got someone who can do that, like she just takes everyone on. I love it. Like there's outside of maybe Sheeran and Carney, like who else does it as often as she does?
Danielle Ponto, I think, is up Ponto, there. Yeah. After what she's done.
And yeah, unfortunately, I've had to watch Amber Clark do that a bunch of times this year and get caught, but that's just a personal Essendon pain. Well, you did mention Brisbane. Let's jump across to the first of the Saturday games. Brisbane 39 defeated Richmond 22.
Before we do go there, Liam, I want to answer your question from before. I've done a bit of quick research and I've found five names for you that have debuted or had their All-Australian Guernsey in their debut season. So four of them were in their outright debut season. We've got Courtney Gumm for GWS in 2018, Chloe Malloy in her Rising Star year in 2018, Maddie Prosparkas, as we said, in 2019, and Caitlin Greiser when she won the leading goal kicker in her first season in 2020. So the extra one, and the interesting one, is Kalinda Howarth, because she played one season with Brisbane, didn't play a game in 2018, and then was on Gold Coast's inaugural list in 2020 and was named on the bench in 2020, so I count her as well.
Well, that's this is some very helpful statistics. There's only one name I don't recognise there, and that's Courtney Gumm. And then
Courtney Gumm.
I've now done my quick wiki research, and I understand why.
Courtney Gumm is probably the best comparison, actually, to Ayla Shearer. She's brought in as a mature recruit and basically just dominated in the GWS midfield. She came pretty close to winning the W Award that year, if my memory is correct.
Yeah, that's outrageous. Well, before we were unruly sidetracked by Will, I was going to discuss Brisbane and Richmond.
Where we can talk about Ayla Shearer. Perfect segue.
Where we can talk about Ayla Shearer. Where I want to lead with this. I think Brisbane are dominant. I think that forward line is absolutely ridiculous. Like, they have actually no weaknesses. Ayla Shearer, gun, superstar, best defender of this year, thrown in the midfield in the second half when Richmond were looking like they were struggling. Is she in our sides for fantasy next year? Do we agree with the decision to make Shearer a midfielder firstly, and then maybe should she be a fantasy relevant player again?
I can't see Richmond making her a permanent midfielder. That would be very surprising.
Yeah, that would be.
They've got so much depth through there at that moment.
Do they really have so much depth? Like, they've got Egan, they've got Conti, they've got McKenzie, and then they can throw a Hosking through there.
Sarah Hosking specifically.
No, yeah. I think Jess Hosking also did have some midfield minutes this year. And
lately they've been running Meg McDonald through there quite a lot.
Meg McDonald, the Jamie Garner killer.
Yeah. No, but even before that game, she was getting some good run through the middle.
She was. I did actually do some research into her mid-season because I was looking for some desperate value options in my fantasy team. But I just, like, you see, I sat there watching that game and then they finally threw her in. And I kind of took the view that obviously they're trying to create a bit of mayhem and see what they can do to change the game and hopefully catch a spark. But I'm sitting there going, do we think that Sheeran's line-breaking ability is wasted coming from so far back in the ground when she also has an opponent to play on? Like,
not if her ability to intercept is that good. I think that her value this year has been her ability to not just intercept but then take players on. So the ability to stop the attacking foray and then push the ball forward another 40, 50 metres, I think that's the most valuable thing for Richmond, especially when they've got some pretty good targets up the ground, players like McKenzie. Wakefield's had a good season as well. I think their value is just getting it forward from that back line. And I think it's one of the things that's made Richmond hard to play against is that when you do turn it over going inside forward 50, you don't get that time to reset.
My thinking is, though, we know that the most impactful basically play is a player who can exit out the front of the stoppage at a centre bounce and just kick the ball straight deep inside 50. That's true of both the women's and the men's. Can you name many players, not even just at Richmond, but in the AFLW, who have a better ability to break a line like that and just kind of exit from whatever stoppage they're in? Like, I think that's Sheeran's.
I think Will could name quite a few.
I think the problem here, though,
just this year.
I think the problem here, though, is that one of the best at it, and probably not necessarily through speed, but through agility, is actually Monconti.
Yes.
So this I think the problem here is they don't need Sheeran to do that role, because one of the stats that I wish we had available to us was handball receives, because I reckon the amount of times that Conti has got a handball in traffic, broken the lines and kicked inside 50 this season would be very, very high.
Yep.
Oh, look, I don't disagree with you. I would love to see more of it as an experiment, because she's so excellent at breaking lines.
I think it's one of those things where I think she could be a really good pinch-hitting player. I think that, ironically, a player in a very similar that does a very similar thing to what we're trying to get Sheeran to do is actually Ruby Slicer, who used to do it off halfback for Collingwood and then did it through the midfield at Collingwood this season. Is that player who gets the ball, runs forward 20, 15, 20 metres and then kicks it 40 metres. And I think that it's... The reason I bring up Slicer is moving Slicer out of there was good for the midfield, but I think it destabilized the back line. And I think it's more important to stabilize your back line if it's settled, which I think Richmond's is.
Interesting. Whereas I'm
if they do going, end up trialing it, though, geez, you'd want to pick that up immediately.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
And I think that if we hear any word of it being like a pinch hitting 25 to 40% role, I still think it's value.
Yeah, I think for Richmond, that's the best possible thing is every so often needs to be a bit creative. Just chuck her in there, see if she can do it. But I don't think a permanent move would be probably beneficial to either Richmond or the fantasy side of her game, because I think one of the reasons she's been so good this year is those intercept marks and intercept possessions.
Interesting.
I'll tell you a player that I'm very excited to pick up from Richmond next year, though, is Kate Brennan. What a game she had.
She's very good.
Like, she's very, very good, yeah. Like, and they could not find a way to goal unless it was her kicking, quite frankly, very good goals. Like, I saw the first one she kicked was out of nowhere. That could have been a goal of the goal of the round contender if they were still doing that during finals.
Yeah. And I might throw this one to you, Bailey, because you've talked a bit about this in other forums, is that the idea that you might go heavy in your midfield next season and not do much in your forward line. Katie Brennan's probably going to go in underpriced. Could she be possibly even an F1 option to start?
I think so, because like we see it in the men's all the time, and the women's will be very similar next year, where Jazzy Garner's not going to be in the midfield. In the forward line, sorry. Abby Mackay, I don't think is going to be in the forward line. So so the top two are gone. So you're going to have a lot of those players that averaged mid-70s. Yeah. So it's like you can take all... Because if people want to start with Bowers, Marinoff, Georgie Prasparkas, any of these big gun midfields are going to be expensive. You're going to obviously need to take haircuts in other positions. So I think that you do raise a good point where you could go into next season with five players that are either really, really cheap or just rookies. So I definitely could see myself starting a Katie Brennan type player, or even like a Gabby O'Sullivan.
I think Gabby
as F1.
I think Gabby O'Sullivan's a lock for my starting forward line.
Yeah, great. Yeah,
but I think Katie Brennan going into going into round 10, she was priced at 53, and then scored a 41. So I haven't actually got averages for the year, but basically she'll be priced at 50. And given in the past she has scored above that, I think that there's definite possibility she's in again.
So Katie Brennan averaged 40, if I've got that right, 46.
40,
40, how many games did she play?
So 45. Played five. Four.
She played five.
Oh, did she? This is not enough.
Stats are outdated. So it's played round four, round six, round eight, round nine, round 10, and then played the quarterfinal.
Yeah, so she's going to be cheap.
She's going to be in the 40s.
Yeah, no, that's a lock for me immediately.
Yeah, definitely one in the mix. Yeah,
given we've seen what you've done in the past. Then the other fantasy takeaway, and it's one, Jono, that I know you want to talk about, is Ali Anderson appears to now be the tag target at Brisbane.
I thought that was fascinating. Yeah, so Meg McDonald came out and tagged again, but not on Emily Bates, which is huge. Ali Anderson, the tag target. It's great that it's happened. I suppose people are recognizing how good she is, but Emily Bates has been come out and had probably a best on ground game against the Tigers.
Probably best on ground, and probably her best game of the year.
Yeah.
Actually, no. She had that ridiculous performance against Gold Coast with 21 possessions and 11 tackles. But outside of that, yeah, best performance of the year.
Mm.
And it's on the back of, you know, a Brisbane having an embarrassment of riches and Richmond having to pick one player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun to see her getting off the hook a little bit. Maybe an option for next season as well.
Yeah, the fact that the reigning W Award winner is not the primary tag target, not because she's not an effective player, but just because they've got another midfielder in there that's playing so well. I think that it's a really good sign for Bates as a fantasy option next season if Ali Anderson can keep this sort of form up.
Yeah, the only concern would be that Ali Anderson was... She ran a ragged, like, she was still phenomenal despite copping the attention.
Yeah, and Ali Anderson's always had a massive tank. Yeah. It's one of her biggest strengths.
Because I think that's the big strength of Brisbane's midfield. Like, they have actually no weak link. And I think that's the big takeaway from my game. Like, all of their midfielders are elite users of the ball, have huge tanks, and, like, hasn't changed in 2 years, or more than 2 years. Like, they're ridiculous.
And that was a big thing. That was a big thing I noticed during when Adelaide played Brisbane. Was that the first quarter was very close. I think it was quite low scoring from Mary, both sides under 10 points. But Brisbane really in that second quarter took off, because I remember Ali Anderson, Emily Bates, Cassie Spark, like they were all like in the middle of the ground free. And I was just wondering where our midfield was. I was like, I don't know why they've been met up. But obviously, when you look more into it, it's like just their tanks of being able to work back to, in defence, but then also push forward as the team brings the ball forward. So, like, people talk about, like, obviously, Anne Hatchard having a massive tank, but Ali Anderson's definitely up there, because she just works so hard back. And as we said, it's really the whole Brisbane team, if anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are three midfielders that throughout my time watching AFLW I've always considered as the three that have been the massive tank runners, the ones that just keep running, always get on the outside, take those loose marks, and that's Hatchard you've talked about, Anderson and Brippenich, who obviously didn't play this season. Those three were the real forerunners of that just run all day sort of game style. So the fact that pretty much the entirety of Brisbane is following suit on that is a really scary prospect for the rest of the competition.
Yeah, and I think that for me anchors the reason why they're the best fake chance. Like, I know I talked about earlier about the dominance of their forward line, but the fact that you've got Cathy Svark, who kind of breaks the game open in the second quarter with two centre bounce stoppages, like clearances, kind of straight through the middle, deep kicks inside forward. You've got Anderson and Bates. I don't know if there's a rival midfield group that can hang with them. And I think the big thing for me, and I was talking about this with Jono earlier, the detail that we were missing in the last game between Brisbane and Richmond is Jesse Wardlaw didn't play. I've loved the improvement and the performance of Libby Graham as a defender at Richmond. I was kind of hot on her in the preseason in our 18 clubs and 18 days episode about the impact she was going to have to really improve that defensive line for Richmond, but she's not so good that she can stop a combination of Wardlaw, Dakota Davidson, Taylor Smith drifting forward, Talia Hickey, Courtney Hodder. Like, that's just too elite. And that's probably the difference and the reason why Richmond got up earlier in the year. And that forward line combined with the service they get from an elite midfielder is unparalleled, and why I'd back them in against any side.
And Brisbane are going to be.
You go, Baz.
I was just going to say one point that obviously in that game as well, the one where Richmond won, people probably maybe just look at the result, but Dakota Davidson should have been lining up from 15, 10 metres out, sort of on a slight angle, but should have won Brisbane the game because obviously she played on and Gabby Seymour put a hand up and stopped that going through. So it was a close game. But yeah, Brisbane probably should have got over the line even without Jessie Wardour in the team.
Yeah, and on top of that, Dakota Davidson was having an absolute shocking start at that point of the year. She was not playing well. And she's an elite league kind of centre-half forward now.
Yeah, and
she's down the fire. She was angry yesterday on Saturday. That was something to watch, honestly.
And I think that's one of the things about Brisbane that, I mean, we've talked about how strong their midfield is, but they just have so many scoring avenues. They had five individual goal kickers on the weekend. And that doesn't include probably their two best small forwards in Greta Bodie or Courtney Hodder. So neither of them kicked a goal this week, but they've had the tools in Jessie Wardlaw and Dakota Davidson step up. Wardlaw's kicking goals. They're getting goals from the midfield. They're just an attacking machine, Brisbane, that very few defences are going to be able to deal with.
Yeah, I'm
glad we've been talking up Melbourne's defensive line before that, because I reckon if that ends up being the grand final, that's going to be a cracker to watch.
If these two do face off in the grand final, I think it's going to be an absolute snorter of a match.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Well, on the topic of snorters of matches, we've got not that in North Melbourne and Geelong. Sorry, you don't watch this live, but this is a tough watch at times. So North Melbourne win with a game with a goal to win the match with 20 seconds to go in the first quarter.
Yeah, the irony of this was that the first quarter was absolutely incredible to watch. It was electric. And from that point, both teams all of a sudden just decided they couldn't score anymore. It was bizarre, really.
Yeah, I think Geelong threw this. They should have won this comfortably.
I agree. One goal, eight.
And then having 22 more inside 50s.
It was
28% time and forward half.
It was incredibly frustrating. And one of the things was that they had really good around the ground Geelong, but heading inside 50 was where they really broke down. And I wish I had the intercept mark stats for North Melbourne, because every time Geelong kicked it, it seemed like they were kicking it to Nicole Bresnahan. And if not Nicole Bresnahan, it was Brooke Brown or Emma Carney.
Jazz Ferguson as well. Jazz Ferguson
could be any of them. It's just the biggest problem was not only were they taking these intercepts, but half of them were uncontested. And so that was where they were being broken down. And to be fair, North do have a very organised defence, which probably saved them when Geelong were pressing really hard late in the match. But yeah, the inability to kick a score to win the game was quite disappointing for a Geelong team that really had brought that element to their game in the last month or so, because they had always been quite a dour defensive team, and that's shown in this score. But they'd started putting some bigger scores on the board, which has really thrown them into that finals contention, and it just didn't quite come together in this match.
I was just going to say, well, I just have a question for you, because I only just got to see bits and pieces of the match, and I saw like the last quarter, but I don't think Georgie Prasparkas looked right. She'd obviously had the ankle injury the week before, and she obviously had a quiet game by her standard. But obviously, being a Geelong man yourself and going to the game, what did you think? Because for me, she didn't have the same impact that what she normally has.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it was a match where, unfortunately, they had to put her back in just because she's that important a player. But, yeah, clearly underdone, didn't quite have the impact, and unfortunately the risk didn't quite pay off. But I think it was a risk that probably had to be made.
Agreed, yeah.
It did seem like that may have... I don't think that she should have played. I think you would have been better off playing Nina Morrison as a midfielder.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that, in hindsight, absolutely. At the time, given the hot form that Prasparkas had been in, you can see why they did it.
You can definitely see why they did it. Now, on a, in terms of players in hot form, let's talk about someone that I don't think we've talked about at any point in any episode of the entire year. And that's Amy Smith. Hands up if we'd thought about Amy. I know that it's virtual, but I'm assuming everyone's hand's going to be down. Hands up if you thought about Amy Smith at any point this year.
Oh, I had her on my team until the last minute. No,
you had
absolutely.
About the entire comp in your team before before the start of the season.
But no, this one
you played that one close to the chest, jeez.
Yeah, this one came out of absolute nowhere because I was obviously at this game and I looked at the stats. I think it was at halftime and she had something like 12 tackles at halftime and I was like, where has this come from? Because she's playing as a genuine winger, so not a position that's typically high scoring in fantasy, let alone through tackles. It was just completely out of the blue.
Like, I know you say it's out of the blue, and I've gone away, and I want to say that I did some research, but I had Jade Poslowski, the stats man, do the research. And he's come away, and I've asked him two questions. What's the most ever tackles by a player named on the wing at any point in the AFLW? And what's the highest fantasy score by a player named on the wing? Amy Smith, with 17, had the most ever tackles for a player named on the wing. Three more than the next highest. And then for fantasy scores on the wing, it's the third highest ever, with two of those being, the two ones above her being 117 and 112 from Lily Mithen. Mm. And then the other two scores below her for the top five being another score from Alicia Evia and one from Aula O'Dwyer. So three players there that are all, you know, within the conversation at the best at their position and in the best amongst their team. This was a ridiculous performance, like unparalleled. And I want to say I know the reason why it's happened. Like there's some game plans, you know, foible that means that she's getting 17 tackles, but I actually have no idea how.
Yeah, we've been talking about this pretty much all day trying to figure it out. And I think the best theory we could come up with was that she was being deployed as a defensive winger to deliberately stop the release handball. But even then, 17 tackles probably isn't explained by that.
No.
Maybe the ball was just on her wing the whole game. That might be one thing why.
I think that's the best we can come up with.
but I'm sitting here thinking, like, this game has been played a lot, right? Like, there's a lot of times this game has been played. And the fact that it's three tackles higher than anyone ever named on a wing is what tells me that maybe it's not just like a defensive game plan thing. Like,
well, one thing I do want to throw out is, prior to this week, her last two games, she had, also named on the wing, 8 and 9 tackles. Only scores of 52 and 62. But clearly there's something in what her role is that is tackle heavy.
You would think, yes. But 17 was absolutely outrageous and truly the most ridiculous fantasy performance of the round.
Considering that the record is 22 across men and women, with Bowers obviously in the last round. So it's only 5 off of from really ball-like magnets in the midfield, like Marinoff and Bowers up there with the record of 22 and then 21. And this is from Amy Smith in a do-or-die elimination finals as a winger. Certainly if you predicted 10-plus tackles from a winger in the elimination final, you'd be pretty gutsy and you certainly could tell the future.
Yeah. You'd be outrageous. And this is from someone who's playing, that was her 13th game, I believe, and from someone who averages less than 10 disposals a game. I think she had like 16 disposals, 8 marks, 8 kicks, not outrageous from a winger. And for her career, she's averaged less than 5 tackles a game. Like, I know this because I've owned him multiple seasons in draft and then also in keeper. There is just the Ed Langdon game each year that he plays at Melbourne where he scores like 120, 130.
Yeah, yeah.
But like this is even more outrageous because Ed Langdon's been like an inside midfielder in his time and at Fremantle and Collingwood. This is ridiculous. Melbourne. Sorry, Melbourne. No, hang on. Was he not at Collingwood?
You're thinking of his brother, Tom.
No, Fremantle before he went to Melbourne.
Just Fremantle, sorry. Outrageous. Like, unseen in any other format.
Normally, I would say chuck her in the midfield, but I think North Melbourne, the midfield,
Yeah, they're pretty covered.
Well, I don't want to see her in the midfield because there's one player at North Melbourne that I want to see in the midfield next year, and she had an absolute mare on the weekend, and that's Vicky Wall. If I remember correctly, she had 5 free kicks against, kind of true Paige Scott type numbers.
I think you're even understating it. Wasn't it 6?
Oh, it was terrible. It was so tough to watch. Because I watched that game so excited to watch what Vicky Wall could do because she looked so good the game before.
Yeah, it was six.
Yeah. She had
even in that match, she had good moments. Like she had that chase down tackle on Meg McDonald that, you know, drove him forward. Mm. It just didn't quite come together for her.
No. And in fairness, she played much higher up the ground against Richmond. And had even played as a ruck at times, but was nowhere near around the ball as much. And I think she also had a couple of holding the ball free kicks that were pretty soft. But she also, I think, and I know I made it in jest, but she does have a bit of the Paige Scott syndrome, which is I'm not around the ball. Gets a bit angry. I'm angry. Like, I am going to throw myself around. And they're two, like, relatively inexperienced players who are clearly very strong.
Mm.
And so, I don't want to see Amy Smith. I want to see Vicky Wall as a midfielder, having had a full preseason, or at least pinch hitting in the midfield, because I don't know about you, but that would just be unstoppable amounts of power. From given you've also got Garner in there as well,
that would be an incredible fantasy pick if that comes to pass as well.
Yeah. I think the player that might stop that's going to be Eli Gavalis, who was out most of the season.
Yeah, but they've played Gavalis as a permanent forward.
Yeah, and
I think that's been better for North Melbourne in the back half of the year. Just nailing down having a really good set of forwards like Talia Randall, Abatangelo, and then Gavalis playing as forwards. I would prefer to see Wall pinch hit in there alongside whichever king is the midfielder. I forget which one. Alongside Bruton and...
Bruton, Mia King.
Mia King, that's the one. Alongside
Bruton. Emma King's also there, but she's on the rock.
She's much taller.
Yeah, thank you. That's obviously not the one I was thinking
There's also Perry King who could come into it.
No, I think they need to be released and sent somewhere else. 2 kings is enough. Any other interesting thoughts from this game, gang?
Well, I was interested that Emma Carney did come back in because I know you mentioned it, Liam, on the spaces that you were sort of thinking that looked everything like an MCL sprain, which typically is a multi-week injury, but she only missed the one game and came in and played pretty well, obviously. So, and she's another one that I'm sort of a former W Award winner playing in the midfield that isn't playing midfield, but she just has that calming influence down back. So it certainly works for their back six. And obviously it showed on the weekend how they were just able to keep Geelong to... Like, had what, as you said, 22 more inside 50s, and they were able to keep them to a low score, even though this game is very low scoring in itself.
Yeah. And I think having her back there this week really did go a long way to them actually being able to eke out a defensive performance that meant that Geelong couldn't win. But I will say, I thought it was an MCL sprain. And then I did a little bit of Googling about the strapping required to if you're going to run around on an MCL sprain. I'm going to put it out there. I'm near certain that it is. Like, I've done some Googling. I've looked at some pictures. It's literally exactly... And there are a bunch of photos going around of the extensive strapping on Emma Carney's knee. I'm near certain it was an MCL sprain.
Any physios out there, hit us up.
Please do hit us up if you actually have any of the inside goss. But, like, I'm full conspiracying here.
Yeah, MCL it's full aluminium hat and everything. I love it.
Yeah, and if there's any player that can play through an injury like that, it's Emma Carney.
Yeah.
Emma Carney is an intimidating player. Yeah. I was just going to say, obviously, I said Chelsea Randall's, for me, probably the toughest player in the AFLW scene, but Emma Carney's not that far behind.
I think they're both top three.
Yeah.
I have
actually found, Will, those intercept numbers you were looking for before.
Oh, exciting.
It's a lot of fun because it's Nicole Bresnahan had obviously 9 intercepts as the top on the ground.
Yeah.
But, you know, Emma Carney, Sarah Wright, Jazz Ferguson and Brooke Brown all had 6 apiece.
Yeah. As I said, it just felt like every single time Geelong moved past the center line, it was like, oh, let's see where Nicole Bresnahan is and we'll put it right there.
Yeah.
I'm sure that
if it wasn't for Alyssa Bannon, I would say she was the player of the round. Bresnahan, she had a great game.
Yeah, fantastic game.
One player that I also think had one of the most exciting plays in the game, in any game, alongside Alyssa Bannon, is Talia Hickey having a rundown tackle on Mon Conti. That was, I know we've moved on from that game, but I didn't want to go this entire recording without having mentioned that. Like, this is a ruck that we're talking about here. A ruck in their 3rd year chasing down the most agile player in the comp, I reckon.
Yeah, she's a freak. See, I thought you were going to say Talia Randall Specky.
Ellie McKenzie Specky. There are a few there.
So, moving on to the final game of the round, and this is one that I went and saw live, and I think, Will, you were there as well.
Yes.
With the Western Bulldogs falling just short of Collingwood by 5 points, 40 to 35. I don't think that we can talk about this game, setting aside the result, without having a collective sigh about Katie Lynch.
Oh, please don't get me started. Please don't get me started. Oh.
That was, I watching it live, infuriating.
Let's be clear. She's an elite player, and she showed it on the weekend.
She's in the All-Australian squad for good reason, but by God, where was that earlier?
I got to enjoy that. I forget the game she got a 94. I think the second week I had her, she played against Hawthorn in the wet and she got to a 50. And I thought, well, I didn't expect that. But I can't remember who she played where she got a 94 and she kept peeling off and taking all these plus sixes. And I thought, oh, this is brilliant. I'm going to have her doing this all year. And then she went on that run of those 30s and 40s. And I thought, oh, seriously, what was that 94 just an outline? And then she goes and gets 92 on the weekend. So I'm like, well, or was it the other way around? She get 94 on the weekend.
I think she had his high score of the year. She had a 94 on the weekend.
Yeah, so 92 was the one earlier in the year. But yeah, so yeah, she's definitely got the ability to do that. So yeah, it wasn't great looking at the score and yeah, doing it in the first game of the finals.
The first game of the year that didn't matter for any of us, for fans' perspective. Yeah. Because she was clearly the Dogs' best on ground, at least for my mind. Unless anyone else has any strong opinions in the alternative.
No, I think there's a few other players worth calling out at the Dogs, but I think, yeah, Lynch was a cut above this week.
Agreed.
So kind of thinking forward a little bit next year, she did have some very average games when she had a direct opponent with some height. And I think the first one of those was when she was manned up on Taylor Harris earlier in the year. Yeah. And then also having a bad game against Shearlaw. Now, I can't explain 43 against West Coast, but
I think that's just the ball not going back in defence too much, to be honest.
Like, but the Dogs weren't like that great in that game. But I think the big thing to take away from this is that when Katie Lynch is actually forced to play a pure defensive role in another tall forward, it takes her from like a 70-80 top three defender down to, you know, rookie level. I think that's the big takeaway, because Sabrina Frederick can move and do some good things in the forward line for Collingwood, but Katie Lynch had her number all day and was dripping off and just is an elite player.
Yeah, they were playing 2 on Frederick as well, basically to allow that to happen, which was really beneficial for Lynch. I think I talked about this pre-season, and I'm surprised that they didn't use Millie Brown more as that tall defender to free up Lynch. Because they brought in a player almost specifically to play that role and then didn't really give her much of a chance to play that role. So that's, I said it preseason this year. I'll say it now and preseason next year. If Millie Brown comes into that Bulldogs lineup, Lynch will be fantastic.
Yeah, because we know that what she's like when, let's harken back to the player. I think she's, I know I was about to mention James Sicily, but then I realised I was actually thinking about this earlier this week. I think she's almost a bit of a Stephen May. When And I know that Stephen May isn't necessarily the most fantasy-relevant men's defender, but just has a little bit of that forced to play a one-on-one role, is not a great scorer, but then when allowed to drift off, has that super high ceiling.
Mm, agree.
Yeah, agree. Yeah.
Speaking of Melbourne players, I think she's actually the anti Ed Langdon, where she ever so often just has an absolute crap one.
Oh, yeah, that is, yeah. She has that extreme low floor every year. She's just like, or each of the last two seasons, just goes, yep, I think it's worthwhile bringing her in. She's coming off the back of three good scores, below 40 immediately.
Yeah. Well, I think that the I was going to say the other player that was very impressive, but is on the other side, big reason that Collingwood won, was Eliza James.
Mm, absolutely. Yeah,
this is gonna this is going to be my next point, and I think it's a positive and negative for Collingwood. She's gone, right? But you're relying on a 19-year-old to kick four goals to win you a final. Are you not a little bit, and a medium-sized forward at that?
Yeah, I think Collingwood's year is next year, because I think that obviously you'll get back Bree Dave, you'll get back Brittman each year, and I think that that just completely changes Collingwood's structure, obviously, and for the better, obviously, you can have Malloy forward more. Slash obviously has said that she wants to, like, to be midfield, but I'm sure that she'll probably have stints at point where she might go back. But yeah, like, I remember Eliza James got, I think she got, didn't she get dropped after she kicked the game winner against St Kilda or something?
And it's she did
was
get
it
dropped,
that week or the week after?
Yeah, the week after, I think. And then she comes in, but she stays in, then elimination final, kicks four goals. Brilliant performance. Yeah.
Super talent. And I think I agree with you there, Bales, where as good as she's been as a midfielder this year, Chloe Malloy being forward again is probably the biggest fix that Collingwood can do with the tools they currently have.
Agree.
And one of the things that was quite interesting on the weekend was later in the game, Collingwood lost three players to injury, which was Slicer hyperextending her knee, Sarah Rowe had knee soreness or quad tightness or something along those lines, and Tani Brown got a head knock. So those three midfield-type players go out of the game, and all of a sudden, the stoppage work became a massive issue for Collingwood. Bulldogs got on top. Players like Lamb and Blackburn started really pushing the ball forward out of those stoppages. And to me, it's you put Bree Davey and Brippenici back into this team, and those issues are completely gone.
Yeah.
And so to me, next season, much like you said, Bales, next year, it's going to be super interesting to see how this team comes together, because they'll have a few important pieces that a lot of people have kind of forgotten have been missing, really.
Yeah. But I think another player that they probably gained in their forward line is someone who they've had to play in the midfield in the back half of the year, and that's Ash Sheridan, who is a good medium-sized forward.
Yeah, agreed.
And then hopefully a better season from Sarah Rowe, who certainly has not looked her best this year either.
What about taking Frederick out of the forward line and putting her in the ruck?
They did look really good in some of those mid rounds. Like, yeah, I think this might be Alison Downey's last year.
It was interesting because one of the points I've actually written down was the player who I was actually really impressed with in the ruck was Imogen Barnett. I struggled to nail down that forward line role, but look, she drew enough even contests with who we suspect will be the All-Australian ruck in Alice Edmonds for me to say that she's put in a very good effort. Took a match-saving mark at the end of the game. Just having that mobile ruck, similar in the style, I guess, to your favourite, Talia Hickey. Probably not quite as mobile as Hickey, but in that sort of build, I think probably suits Collingwood a bit better.
I don't think you could run with just Barnett, but I think a combination of Barnett and Frederick certainly helps the kind of movement around the ground. And that was when Collingwood looked best on the weekend. I know that we're talking them in very, you know, sad terms, but they looked amazing in the first half, just dominating with run on the wings. And that can be facilitated by more mobile players in the middle of the ground.
Yeah. I agree. And I think that it's using that sort of ruck combination, almost kind of like, I guess the best example I can actually think of is Geelong's ruck setup in the men's, where they sort of have a less mobile ruck as the primary ruck. So that would be Frederick in this case. And then Frederick either moves forward or sits back as an interceptor to use her height, and Barnett does the rest of the rucking around the ground. I think that's the setup that they could definitely use to their advantage.
And I think the one setup that might actually mirror that in women's is what Richmond have done in the last couple of rounds. Poppy Kelly actually, instead of her being forward, she actually rests back and does some of her ruck work in the back half, and then Seymour just runs around the ground as this hyper-mobile, you know, contested player just getting from contest to contest.
Yeah, I think the other good example is Taylor Harris at Melbourne, who I think has become one of Melbourne's most important players, just to be giving Lauren Pearce a chop out, and her ability to work around the ground and then go up forward and have impact has showed the benefit of having that dual ruck set up and having a mobile ruck in your lineup.
Yeah, and just while we're talking Taylor Harris, I think the player that actually allows her to do that is Kate Hall, just being such a good distributor forward that you don't need necessarily Taylor Harris to be the super, like the only forward up in that forward line who can dictate play.
Agreed.
But another thing in terms of the game we were talking about, which is Collingwood, you've already mentioned Chloe Malloy, you know, spending a little bit more time forward on the weekend. She had a horrendous fantasy performance. But the other one is Ruby spending a lot more time at halfback.
Yeah. I was a big fan of this. Ruby's 50th game, just give her a bit of a shout-out for that. But the back line looked a lot more settled with Slasher back there. She gives them good run out of the back line. I think going forward, especially with Davey and Benici back, pinch-hitting through the midfield, kind of like we were talking about with Sheeran, is probably the best role for her. It meant that Stacey Livingston, we've seen her be exposed a little bit in the last couple of months, in the last couple of rounds rather, when some really good attacking teams isolated her. I think it gave her a bit more confidence back there, and she played a fantastic game. I personally would like to see Ruby in the back line, despite what she tells me that she wants to be in the midfield.
I think, I don't know if John, you still got the stats up. I think that was the biggest difference, was the work of Stacey Livingston, who was, I know Eliza James kicked four goals, but I'd say Collingwood's actual most important player was Livingston. There was 2.5 quarters where the ball did not get past her.
Yeah, at most intercepts for the round by a mile. I think she had 12.
As an interceptor, was ridiculous.
Yeah. It was a fantastic effort. And it just shows the value, I guess. Kind of what I was saying with Sheeran is the thing about Slasher, I guess, is she's got two All-Australians as a defender. Having your good defenders in your back line makes so much of a difference.
It's sort of an outrageous concept.
It's outrageous, but just bear with me. Put your best defender in your back line and you'll reap the benefits.
Yeah. And the one thing I get noticed from Stacey Livingston is she always looks so calm. Like, it's almost like that, like in soccer terms, like that really calm goalkeeper that sort of gives a defence so much confidence, knowing that the Collingwood defence, knowing they've got such a calm presence in that back line, it obviously just would boost the confidence of not only the team, but especially the defence.
Without a doubt. I think if you're going to go votes from this game, and I know I've already talked about it with Will and Jono, but I'm pretty sure it's Livingston, James and Lynch, with one of Lamb or Blackburn unlucky to miss out.
Yep. Well, can't disagree. So especially with me missing a game, bloody time.
Look, I'd have some sympathy for you, Bales, but I'm actually quite happy on the weekend. You missed out on a game of AFLW, but I gained an extra hour of sleep when I get up at 5 a.m. on a Monday morning to watch some NFL. Yeah. So I'm certainly entertained by it.
Yeah.
I do think you arguably missed the game of the round, though. That's the real tragedy.
Yes.
I think it would be remiss of us not to mention that, you know, having 5,000 people at Vic Park was bloody excellent, and it will be sorely disappointing if we cannot have somewhat similar situation when Richmond play on the weekend.
Yeah, I think this is probably the one big bit of news that we haven't talked about, is the fact that Richmond are steadfastly not moving their game from the Swinburne Centre, despite the capacity only being 2,500 and the game being sold out in 13 minutes.
No, it was less than 13 minutes.
Like, they're claiming it's 13 minutes, but it was sold out almost instantly.
Like, within 4 minutes, I reckon. It was, like, stupid. I'm not sure what tack Brendan Gale is going with here as someone who sounds like he might be shooing for the for Gillon McLachlan's job. But,
and I must say, as a Geelong supporter, I'm a little bit salty about it.
I was going to say, this is the opposite of the precedent set by the men's comp, where if the crowds are coming, sorry, you don't get Geelong, you got to play at the MCG. Surely they're making Richmond do the same thing.
There are some quotes hanging around from Gale talking about the time that Geelong had their final against Richmond moved in 2017. And he's directly quoted as saying, like, you know, you've got to prioritise the fact that more fans need to be able to go to these games.
Well, I've been saying for years that that with Geelong finals in the men's, that they should always be at GMHBA Stadium. I was about to call it Simmons Stadium
I knew I loved you, Bales.
But I've said for ages that they should play their home finals at their home ground, but they've always been moved to the MCG. So, like, as you say, like, this ground's only 2,500 and you can move it to, like, it could even be like a Marvel Stadium or something. So I'm sure they'd be able to, maybe not fill out, but they'd be able to get a lot of people there, because we've seen AFLW games quite a number of times be sold out being at these smaller grounds.
Yeah. I think the Hawthorn games that have been played there have been sold out, and we're not a finals team. How is this not a predictable problem that was going
to
happen?
More people rocked up to the same teams playing 2 weeks prior at 3,100 people rocked it up to watch it at Arden Street in a non-final. What did you expect was going to happen? And that's setting aside the fact that the AFLW in their infinite wisdom have decided to clash both finals with the Matildas. Yes.
No sense. Makes no sense.
And the WBBL, don't forget that as well. So.
And the WBBL. Like, okay, the WBBL happens a slightly more than international games for the soccer. But, like, yeah, there are so many things wrong with this, and it makes me very frustrated.
I just assumed it was going to be played at like a Marvel Stadium, because I thought, as you said, at least a lot of
I thought it would be Icon Park.
Yeah.
Which is a great
game.
And it's not like you know, the dimensions of the two grounds are so radically different as to cause a massive home field advantage. Because I'm going to let you in on the kind of the stuff that I have stored away in my brain here. It's actually not the grounds themselves that provides home field advantage in a lot of these things. And that was kind of shown to be the case during the COVID years, when home teams won substantially less when there were no supporters in there. And it kind of speaks to the subtle difference you get from actually having a home crowd in at the ground, and the way that that can influence players and the umpire.
Well, speaking of, when I played football a little while ago now, but when I was playing, like, the, especially because, like, at the local ground I played at, we only had sort of one sort of, like, sort of little grandstand slash shelter where all the parents that would stand in. And you get a buzz when you'd sort of, if you were running on that wing and you'd hear the crowd yelling out, like, get the ball, Bailey, like, going harder, like, all that sort of stuff. It just gives you a buzz. And obviously having a crowd there, whether it be home or away, it gives you that buzz. So if you've got more of a crowd, more of a home crowd, then obviously I just think it gives you more of a buzz. So as you say, I think the crowd is always more important and more influential on a game than what the actual ground is.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there are some instances where that's not the case with some extreme weather conditions in some other sports. But I think, at least for the AFLW, I think it's some oversight from the AFLW, and I think it's some ridiculous thinking from Brendan Gale.
Or GMHBA Stadium, where, like, the ground's narrow and every other team kicks out in the full whenever they play there.
See, my personal take on this is that the match should be moved to GMHBA. Because I think the ultimate irony of that would be fantastic.
thankfully, the league is not governed by irony. Take the law by that. So yes. before we get too riled up, let's talk about something more entertaining, which is the free kicks predicted All Australian team. Now, Will, I'm going to throw this to you, even though I've not told you this was going to happen, but I'm going to give it to you to announce our All Australian side.
Yes, very good. The squad is up in everywhere you can find it, either on the websites or on the socials, so you can see who we've missed out on. But I'm going to go line by line, and then we're going to discuss them by the lines. So first line is our five defenders. And defenders we've picked are Emma Carney, Brianna Conan, Eilish Sheeran, Chelsea Biddle, and Jordan Allen.
An interesting group. Who have we got in the midfield?
So for the midfield, we've got Monique Conti, Jazz Garner, Georgie Prasparkas. We've got Alice Edmonds as the ruck, in spite of what the AFLW Team of the Week thinks. And in the roving positions, we have Kiara Bowers and Ebony Marinoff.
Yep. You say it's just the Team of the Week, but the other outrageous one is Most Improved Player of the Year. Alice Edmonds, not even an option.
Oh, couldn't believe
not
it.
Not even an option.
See, if they'd picked several other like midfield players, it might have been okay. But to pick Sarah Lakai, I love Sarah Lakai. She's definitely been a very great improver this season, but you've missed out on someone who's been put into the All-Australian squad.
And Alice Edmonds went from being who in pre-season we thought, oh, Celine Moody's going to be the number one ruck and everything like that. And all of a sudden, Alice Edmonds comes out and dominates.
I think the only reason we haven't heard more of a ruckus about this from the Western Bulldogs is because another one of the potential options for most improves is Isabel Pritchard, who's also on the Dogs. And I honestly think that that's influenced the fact that we haven't heard anything about it because it is outrageous. Yep.
They've had to try and just pump up Izzy Pritchard instead.
I hear what you guys are saying, but as someone who was going to vote for Abby Mackay anyway, I mean,
I
feel like this just guarantees her the win. It's a great one from my perspective.
Abby Mackay is not going to be most. Abby Mackay is not the most improved player in the comp this year. It was almost certainly Alice Edmonds.
Well, Jono, you would have been paying 99 cents to Abby Mackay. People would have lost money betting on you to go for Abby Mackay because.
All right. Before we get too riled up about things, who have we got picked as our forwards in the All-Australian team?
So up forward, we have Kate Hoare, Kate Shearlaw, Courtney Wakefield, Chloe Shear, and the leading goal kicker, Jessie Wardlaw.
I don't think there's anyone particularly controversial in that bunch. And then who have we got on the bench?
On the bench, we have Chelsea Randall, Amy McDonald, Maddie Prasparkas, Ellie Anderson, and Taylor Harris.
Interesting. Now, I haven't prepared you with this, but I'm going to ask you a question. Who were the last three into the side and who were the last three that we culled?
So the
just
last...
to give it a bit of thought on who we were thinking was right on the cusp.
So the last one, I'm going to say the last one into the side was Chelsea Randall, because our original draft of this team had one player who wasn't selected in the squad, and that was Libby Birch. So we originally had Libby Birch on the bench. She's been cut because she can't be All-Australian. And we brought in Chelsea Randall. The other players that are probably the other two as the last three are one of Prasparkas or Anderson, Maddie Prasparkas, that is. We had a bit of a debate about this. And then probably, good question. Most likely someone up forward, so possibly a Courtney Wakefield, I reckon.
Even though Courtney Wakefield's actually in the team.
Courtney Wakefield is in the team, yes. Because I've kind of picked Harris on the bench as a forward slash ruck.
Okay. That makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah.
Interesting. And then who were the players that we had to cull? Obviously, outside of Libby Birch, who we've talked about the fact she was kind of right on the cusp. Who's the next player that probably comes in if the squad is one bigger?
So I think the most controversial one that we've omitted, and this is one that I'm sure Bailey can talk to, is Anne Hatchard. Had a fantastic year, Hatchard, but the midfield pool this year has been very, very strong. Do we have any player that we think would miss out for Hatchard?
I actually would agree. I would actually agree with everyone you've put in there, and we probably unfortunately have Anne just outside. And my big thing for that is she was fantastic over the first half of the year. Obviously, she was taking contested marks, pushing forward, kicking goals, and just outright dominating games. But the more the second half of the year, I noticed she was dropping a lot of the marks. She was dropping a lot of uncontested marks as well. And her game did sort of take a little bit of a drop off in that back half of the year. And And I think that was probably with, obviously, with Adelaide losing a few matches as well, is when her form did drop off a bit. But as you've mentioned, the midfielders you put in and sit in head of her, like Jasmine Garner, is like going to be in the – she's going to win the W award. If not, it'll be Mon Conti who's next there. You've got Kiara Bowers, who was essentially the player of the round for the last 5 weeks. Yeah. And then you had Ebony Marinoff, who I think that she's had – I think she's just had a better year than Anne. Yeah. So they would be my four that I'd have. And I don't know if you mentioned – and was Georgia Prasparkas in there as well?
Yep, Georgia Prasparkas on the other wing.
Yeah, and she was fan, and she was better, especially in the second half of the year, but she just had a very, very good, consistent year and then took it to another level, especially over the second half. So I'd agree and have all those five ahead of Anne Hatchard, which pains me to say as an Adelaide fan, but – I'm happy Chelsea Randall's in there, so I'll take that.
Yeah, it's really funny because we're going to post our team to social media later, and we've posted with each player, like, one of their key stats. Chelsea Randall was the hardest one to find a relevant stat because she hasn't been statistically fantastic this year because her influence has just been her courage and will to make things happen.
Yeah.
And it's her influence on games is what got her in the team. The second one that was probably most unlucky to miss out was Meg McDonald. Had a fantastic year down back for Geelong, fourth for intercept possessions, but just on pure influence, I went for Chelsea Randall.
I think the other one for me that is unlucky to miss, and I think it's probably just because the narrative's a lot stronger on Georgie Prasparkas, is Charlie Rowbottom. The job she's done for Gold Coast this year has been pretty spectacular, kind of anchoring a midfield that really does lack kind of any other superstar to go with her. I really liked her performance. And I also think that Lip herself, given the back half of the year that she's had in an elite side as the best midfielder on that team, I think it's probably another year at Melbourne before she does eventually make an All-Australian side for my mind. But again, tough to miss given the year she's had.
Yeah, Purcell I was originally looking at to pick, and I was like, oh, do I pick her or Prasparkas? And I was doing a lot of this based on stats, and the one thing that I was missing, and I thank Liam for pointing me back to it, was the coaches' votes. And it's the fact that both Prasparkas, in fact, have polled so well in those ones that got me both of them into the team. Because the fact that Prasparkas has finished, I think, equal second with Mon Conti, despite missing two games in the coaches' award, just shows how good a season she's had. Basically, in any game where Essendon has gone anywhere slightly well, Maddie Prasparkas has been the best player.
Yeah, I think that's the reason that I advocated. Like, if Bombers were playing well, it was because of Maddie Prasparkas. Even when she got tagged that game against Richmond, I think she still polled votes. Like, she's a very, very good player. Well, I think that's the entirety of the content that we got to talk about here. I reckon if we decided to talk about the finals of the Cup coming this week, we may actually extend the entirety of this recording to about 10 hours.
Very good.
any parting thoughts, any final thoughts that we've got, maybe about, maybe one prediction, our predictions on who we're going to win the two finals this coming weekend. John, I'll throw to you first. You haven't spoken in a while.
Let's see. I think North is probably going to knock off Richmond. They didn't have Emma Carney last time, and that is such a big, important part of them, their backline structure. So if they can hold up with that Geelong... Even without that home ground advantage, yeah. No, if they can hold up to that Geelong onslaught, I reckon they can knock off the Tigers as well. So I'd back them in there. The other game... I worry for Collingwood. I think they're in for a rough game this week. They've got a lot of injuries. Adelaide's going to be, you know, they're going to be out to sort of, I don't know, I guess a revenge game, I suppose, having lost for the third time this year only. So I reckon Adelaide's going to win that one comfortably.
Yep. What about you, Bales?
Well, John, that was music to my ears. I love hearing that. Yeah. I'll go the other game first, North Richmond. I do agree. I think they'll get it done. I think that North Melbourne are just, I think all year they've looked a lot more steady. And I know that obviously their bat line, obviously, as we saw on the weekend just gone, were very, very impressive. And I think, as you said, Emma Carney being back, that it's like, she's like the Chelsea Randall being out for Adelaide. It's like like a Georgie Precise being out for Geelong, you know, in a way where they're just so important that you just sort of throw them in. I think an extra week from her injury against I can't remember who she against Collingwood. I think that they'll win, but I think it will be a very close game again. I think it will be within a kick. And how funny would it be if they get another draw and we go to over like extra time? Like,
well, that'd be outrageous.
That'd be funny. So that would be my sort of, if there was a bit of a speculative pick, maybe a draw and get extra time. And then yeah, with the Crows Collingwood, I did sort of say it before, but obviously I can't definitely rule out Collingwood winning the game because it's a final. But I do think Collingwood year is next year when they get Bree Davey and Britt Bonici back. So I'm thinking the Crows will sort of, I think they will be breathing a little bit of fire after letting a game slip because they were up by, what, 3 goals on the weekend against Melbourne. And the AFLW, I would have hoped that the Crows wouldn't have let a 3-goal lead slip. So hopefully they get the job done this week. And I did actually message Will and I said that I thought that it'll be a Crows-Melbourne grand final. I just thought maybe Crows will go on and win the game and beat Brisbane. But that was probably a little bit of wishful thinking after the way Brisbane looked on the weekend. Yeah, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah, the turnaround in fortunes in that game was swift and unfortunate for you, Bales.
Yeah.
It wasn't the most convincing 3 goals I've ever seen Adelaide kick. They were very haphazard at best.
Yes, but, agree, yeah. But we did keep Melbourne like very quiet in the first quarter, but then Melbourne decided to go, Bailey's having too much fun over in the US, so we're going to flip the script and we're going to come out and they played like they have all year, which obviously has been very impressive. So, yeah.
And Will, what are your thoughts? Who are you tipping this weekend?
Yeah, I think the road trip mixed with some injury concerns will make it just a little bit too hard for Collingwood. Collingwood have traditionally matched up fairly well with Adelaide. So under normal circumstances, I would have been saying they're not without a shot. But I think with Slasher under another injury cloud, a few of those midfielders feeling the pinch, I think Adelaide should win that one fairly comfortably. I think the Richmond North game is going to be an absolute cracker, actually. One thing I will say, I agree with you guys that I think North should win this game, but their inability to kick scores in the last couple of weeks is a bit concerning. They've only kicked 4 goals in the last 2 matches, and one of those was against Richmond. So they need to start getting a bit more forward impact if they're going to not only beat Richmond this week, but actually press on and maybe even win a prelim. Having said that, as Jono said, Emma Carney, massive in for North, and I think she'll see them to get them into the prelim.
So you're going to that game, obviously, Will?
I'm not. I didn't actually get a ticket, which was unfortunate. Sold out. No. So I am very much hoping that it gets moved because I wasn't as lucky as I think Liam and Mel managed to get tickets, but I did not. So with any luck, it'll be moved. So
yeah, where's that? Is that Adelaide Oval? Is that where? Or is it somewhere else?
Oh, sorry. The Adelaide.
Collingwood. Yes. Yeah.
No, I tried to get tickets for the North Richmond game and couldn't get tickets for that one. The Adelaide Collingwood ones at Unley Oval, and we strongly considered making the road trip. Me and my partner Zoe, who's a big Collingwood girl, but we ended up deciding it was going to be a little bit too much. So I decided, oh, you know what? I'll just rock on over to Punt Road and watch the other final. And now I can't do that either. So.
Yeah, you can watch it through the fence. That'll be a fun one. Yeah.
You can't actually watch it through the fence. You can just like sit basically on the road and watch it.
Well, I might end up over at bloody Amy Park the way it's going. So see how it goes.
Well, I'm going to be a little bit different. And I, as much as I went into this segment saying that I think North are going to win, I think I'm going to be a lone wolf here, and I think it's going to be Richmond. I think that their forward 50 entries are substantially better than Geelong, and I would say if there's any one game style that is most like Geelong, it's Richmond. But I'd say they're just better at it.
Mm.
Their inside forward 50 kicking is truly what can set them apart. And I'd say that if you're going to put them on a platter, kind of the forward combination of Brennan and Wakefield is better than Parry and Scott as a tall forward combination.
Underselling Chloe Shearer a bit there. But
I am underselling Chloe Shearer a little bit. But then in terms of the kind of high-impact player that can kick goals, the best on ground in that kind of high impact, high strength player was Ellie McKenzie. And so if you kind of put that as a scoring trio together, I think I'd take Richmond. And I think that Emma Carney was a great intercept player on the weekend, but her run and dash was probably not as strong as usual because, again, she has almost certainly sprained her MCL and she's not telling anyone about it. and so I think there's a highly likely possibility that we see Meg McDonald tag Jasmine Garner out of the game again. Ooh. And then it's up to kind of Jenna Bruton to go toe-to-toe with Mon Conti.
Yeah.
Well, that actually raises an interesting question. If we think back to that North Richmond game, like Jazz Garner's best quarter was her fourth quarter because she'd, you know, figured out how, I think, best to deal with that tag. Like, that's a surprise tag that was launched against her. Is that something that is going to be as effective this time?
I don't think it was a surprise tag. I think it was just a surprising player to tag. I think, just like us, we thought it would be Grace Egan.
Yeah, I think both teams are going to be putting a lot of effort into how that matchup is going to happen again, because I think that if they just go, all right, Meg McDonald, go do the thing again, North will have prepared for that.
Yeah.
But Richmond are too good a team and too good a group to just settle for, oh yeah, it worked last time, let's do that again. They'll have a new plan. It might be a variation of that plan, but they'll have new tactics. So it's going to be a cracking matchup. And I really don't mind the tip of Richmond because I do think this could really go either way.
Yeah, I agree. It's 50-50 game as well.
And then for the other game, I'm pretty comfortable with it, with going with Adelaide here. I agree. The injuries are mounting.
Didn't want to lone wolf that one.
I really don't want to lone wolf that. And then maybe that'll come back to bite me. But I really don't like the Collingwood forward line. And I don't like their injuries.
The injuries for mine are what's really been holding them back. The fact that Slashers basically spent the last month with an injury cloud hasn't helped, and I think it's just going to be a bit too much for him.
Yeah, and if you're going toe-to-toe, like let's say that, you know, with no Ruby and Chloe Malloy playing forward, it's Michaela Cann and Jamie Lambert up against Ebony Marinoff and Anne Hatchard. I'm pretty comfortable saying Adelaide's got the better group. So I think I'm going to roll with Adelaide. And that brings us to the end of this episode/recording. I hope you all enjoyed. Where can we find everyone on the socials?
I'm at Oz and Steven on Twitter.
I'm at Will_VI on Instagram.
Yeah, and I think I'm the same everywhere. I think it's just Bailey Ergang on Twitter, and I think it is just Bailey_Ergang at Instagram as well. And if people don't know how to spell last name, it's IRRGANG because most people get it wrong when saying it and spelling it. So there you go.
Perfect. And you can find me on Twitter at LMTom1. All right, everyone, be sure to listen in next week when we do something similar, maybe a little bit shorter with some slightly fewer games to talk about.
Yeah, very good. Very good. And just keep your eyes out for our All-Australian prediction on the social media. That'll be going up on Twitter and Instagram in the very near future.
100%. It may actually even be out before this episode goes out.
Very nice. And we'll also put up some polls to see who you reckon is unlucky to miss out on both the actual squad and in our team as well.
Mm. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Very good. See ya.
Beautiful. See you, guys.